Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Callum Borchers. The music of the 1970s rock band Queen, and the voice of its legendary frontman, was everywhere this week. You had the post-game celebration of the World Series champion Boston Red Sox. And, of course, there's a new movie about the band, titled Bohemian Rhapsody, out this weekend.
Ready, Freddie?
Let's do it.
All of this gives us a delightful excuse to talk about the legacy of the man that the Boston Globe's Rene Graham calls the greatest frontman in rock and roll history, Freddie Mercury. And with me in the studio is Rene Graham. Hello, Rene. Thanks for coming in.
How you doing, Callum?
So that's a pretty bold proclamation, Rene. You say he is the greatest frontman of all time. Why does he deserve that distinction?
Well, first and foremost, the voice. You know, this is a great voice, not a great rock voice. This is a great voice in the way that you talk about Luciano Pavarotti, or you talk about Leontine Price, or you talk about Aretha Franklin. This was a singular and magnificent gift, and he used it to full effect.
And he had a voice. He also had an interesting backstory. Maybe back up a little bit. Tell us a little bit more about who Freddie Mercury was.
His real name was Farouk Bulsara, and he was of Parsi parents born in Zanzibar. And then spent a good part of his childhood in India before moving to Britain. And so it's very interesting. People tend to think of Freddie Mercury as, you know, a white British guy, and he wasn't. You know, he was a man of color. He understood what it was like to be an outsider when he moved to England. And I think all of these different influences, the Indian influences, the African influences, I think figured into Queen's music quite significantly.
Do you think that racial ambiguity maybe broadened his appeal? He could have passed as white, but he also was someone that other groups would identify with.
You know, it's interesting. I don't really think his racial background came up a great deal. I mean, I think people understand, you know, this is pre-Google, so people couldn't really figure out what his background was.
Sure.
But what was important about Freddie Mercury in the way that he related to outsiders was the way he presented queerness. And that's where a great community really found a champion in Freddie Mercury.
Yet he wasn't out and proud in the same way that we've seen some contemporary gay icons be. I'm thinking of someone like Adam Rippon, for example. You know, he was not like that.
No, but we're talking about the 1970s. There really weren't many, you know, stars of his magnitude who were out. Freddie Mercury was out in a way that the way he dressed, the way he approached music. I mean, he music, you think about the lead singers in the 1970s. You're thinking of Roger Daltrey of The Who, Bon Scott of AC/DC, Robert Plant of Led Zeppelin. You know, it's very masculine. It's very macho. That's not what Freddie Mercury was doing. Freddie Mercury performed in usually a unitard, a very, very low-cut unitard and ballet shoes. He looked like a harlequin. You know, he looked like a court jester. He would be preening and strutting. I mean, he had a whole kind of vocabulary of movement that no one had really seen a lead singer of a rock band do before. And I think that was what was really significant. His queerness was projected that way. He didn't need to make proclamations.
He was maybe dropping hints, and the band's name was Queen after
and
all.
And the band's name was Queen, but in a lot of ways, it wasn't even a hint. You know, if those who were supposed to get it, got it.
All right, so I want to play a few live performances from Queen. Let's start with the closing song from the band's iconic performance at Live Aid. This was at London's Wembley Stadium in 1985. It's one we're all familiar with. Let's listen. Is Crazy Little Thing Called Love at Live Aid in 1985. And Renee, I love how David Grohl of the Foo Fighters describes this performance. He says, quote, "Every band should study Queen at Live Aid. If you really feel like that barrier is gone, you become Freddie Mercury." And in a way, Renee, I'm thinking of my own kids. They're 2 and 3. They dance and sing with zero inhibitions. Most of us get a little more cautious as we get older. It seemed like Freddie never did.
He didn't have that. Not on stage. People would say he was very guarded when, you know, in his private life. But on stage, he was like a panther. I mean, he was stalking the stage. He covered every inch of that stage when he was performing. And the remarkable thing about that Live Aid performance is, you know, you got to remember, this went on for hours and hours, and U2 performed and reunited Led Zeppelin and David Bowie and Paul McCartney. people remember Live Aid because of Queen's 20-minute performance. That's how remarkable that performance was. And Freddie just sort of understood the way to connect to that many people. I mean, there were, you know, tens and hundreds of thousands of people in that audience. And there was just a way he connected with every single one of them, which was just, even all these years later, it's just a remarkable thing to behold.
I want to amend one thing I said earlier. The true fans, I'm sure, will be saying, no, that was not the closing song at Live Aid. It was just part of the set. So I want to just mention that. Renee, off the top, you said that it was really Freddie's voice that really made him stand out. I want to play one other clip, too, that really, I think, highlights that voice. This is Freddie Mercury singing Somebody to Love in Montreal in 1981. And just to set the scene, he begins seated, alone, spotlighted at a piano with a few adult beverages on top of the piano. Let's take a listen.
Somebody, can somebody find somebody, somebody love? Okay, let's do it.
And just to set the scene here, Renee is lip-syncing along as we go. You appear to have goosebumps. What's going through your head?
I'm getting absolute chills. You know, when you listen to that, you know, that's a gospel song. That's Freddie Mercury taking the audience to church. Think about any other rock star of that era who would do such a thing. You know, that is a straight-up gospel song. You don't have to change a word to put that in a church. You know, that's what Freddie Mercury did. And you listen to Somebody to Love. You listen to something like Crazy Little Thing Called Love. That's rockabilly. It was always the range and the texture of the music that fascinated him that made him such a remarkable artist.
You know, a couple of years ago, a group of European researchers conducted what they called an acoustical analysis of the voice and singing style. And they found, unsurprisingly, that Freddie Mercury was a master. So there's science behind this theory you have too, Renee, but I suppose we didn't need the researchers to tell us that.
He had a four-octave voice. You know, he loved opera. He loved the theatrical and the grandiosity of it, you know, but it was also just the passion, the way he sang, that kind of, you know, to use a baseball term, he left it all on the field every time he was on stage. And, you know, there's no way that as listening to that, you're not going to be deeply affected by his voice and his message. I mean, that's why, you know, almost, 27 years after his death, people are still talking about Freddie Mercury.
So to borrow your sports comparison there, you know, in sports, we talk about a coaching tree, right? So you look at Bill Belichick, oh, he's one of the greatest coaches of all time. Who were the coaches who have sprouted off of him and also gone on to success? But we can do the same with a rock star like Freddie Mercury. Like, who else has he influenced? So who are the people who came after him that we can kind of trace back to his iconic style?
I think certainly someone like George Michael. I would even say Tom York of Radiohead, who does a lot of solo work now. But the person who comes to mind most for me is the late, great Chris Cornell, who was the lead singer of Soundgarden. The same way that he used his voice, he had this multi-octave voice, and he could sing anything. You know, he could scream to the rafters, but he could also just, you know, break you in two with the most beautifully sung ballad. You know, that's not something every singer can do. People will say, oh, that person's a song stylist, or they bring their own. No. Freddie Mercury was a pure singer of the heart and soul. And you hear that again in a few people here and there. But, you know, the same way that there was no one like Freddie Mercury before him, there's not going to be another Freddie Mercury after him.
You know, you described his interesting ethnic background earlier, and that showed up in some of his music, although not always the songs that are best known or most famous. And I'm thinking of one that I know is a personal favorite of yours, Renee. This is the 1978 song Mustafa by Queen. It was on their jazz album. And he sings in a variety of languages, some English, some Arabic, some Persian. Some of the singing is just plain gibberish, right, but it is an awful lot of fun. Let's listen in.
Ibrahim. Ibrahim. Ibrahim.
So, Renee, I bet that wouldn't make the top 10 of Queen favorites for most casual fans. So why do you love it so much?
You know, that's what they call a deep album cut. But, you know, when you're in the middle of listening to all this other music and this comes on, it just sort of snaps you to attention. You're just like, what is this? You know, it sounds like a religious call to prayer. You know, so you, and again, in the sort of, you're listening to rock music, where does that come from? But it's also just another way of him showing what his voice can do. This kind of, you know, expansive, interesting, exotic approach to music. I mean, it, you know, it wasn't just entertaining you. He was really, you know, trying to educate people about the breadth of music that he was into. And I think that was really, really instructive for a lot of his fans.
He was a genre bender, to say the least.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, again, you know, disco, rockabilly, you know, hard rock, gospel. He could do it all.
And opera, I should point out. You mentioned this, I think, earlier, and Mercury did release a collaborative album in 1985 with the Spanish opera singer Montserrat Caballé. Here's the title track, Barcelona. Actually passed away just last month. Renee, we've seen artists sort of cross over from one genre to another, but this is dipping into opera is a little bit more unusual. How big a deal was it at the time?
It was a huge deal. I mean, it made sense. You could hear the opera influence in his voice. And the good thing about listening to him with someone of the caliber of Montserrat Caballé is he's not struggling to keep up, you know, and she's not sort of dumbing down her talent to find so he can find a way in. You know, he is with her like note for note. And the way that their voices blend together says a lot about the way his voice was trained and the way he knew how to use his voice. Again, it's not just like this sort of novelty of, you know, a rock star singing with an opera star. This was someone who really understood the music, how to approach it, and you know, it was this wonderful thing that surprised people, but it shouldn't have. You know, it really made sense for Freddie Mercury to make an opera song.
So the new film is called Bohemian Rhapsody. It is out, and it's getting mixed reviews, Renee. When you go to see it, if it doesn't live up to expectations, will that kind of ruin the moment for you, or are you just enjoying this occasion to relive the music of Queen?
You know, nothing can ruin my love of Freddie Mercury. You know, the movie could be, you know, absolute dreck, and it doesn't even matter to me. You know, I'm happy about the movie coming out in as much as it will introduce a generation to Queen's music beyond Bohemian Rhapsody. You know, that's a great thing. But, you know, Freddie Mercury is Freddie Mercury. You know, go there, get the sense of it. But if you want to know Freddie Mercury, go see those concert films, go see those videos, and that will give you really the essence of who he was as a man, a performer.
All right. And, of course, we are going to let Mr. Mercury play us out here on Bohemian Rhapsody. That is Boston Globe columnist and Freddie Mercury fan, Renee Graham. Renee, thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you.
That is our show for this weekend. Have a great weekend. I'm Callum Borchers, and this is Radio Boston.
I see a little silhouette of a man.
Scaramouche, Scaramouche, will you do the fandango?
Thunderbolt and lightning, very, very frightening me.
Galileo, Galileo,
Galileo, Figaro.
Magnifico!
I'm just a poor boy, nobody loves me.
He's just a poor boy from a poor